Either B-Mitch requested it or Pat Leonard requested it.
Pat Leonard.
Pat Leonard joins us now from New York. You can follow Pat at P. Leonard, NYDN, New York Daily News. Check out his podcast, Talking Ball with Pat Leonard, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Pat, what's up, dude? How are you?
Man, that was a smooth intro. The vibes with the Commanders, I can tell, are just sky high.
You know things are going good when you can play Wilson Phillips unironically.
No doubt.
If you have some vibe questions, we're happy to discuss them. What are the vibes in the Meadowlands, dude?
Oh, they're bad. Three straight losses. 10 points combined in their last two home games against the Bengals and Eagles. And as bad as the season's going, JP and B. Mitch, at home, the Giants have been absolutely horrendous. They are 0-4 at home. They barely score any points. In those two games against the Bengals and Eagles, they actually scored a total of 3 first-half points in the two games combined. Damn. It's like the pressure that they're under increases tenfold when they're in front of the fan base that is just tired of seeing the same old thing. And frankly, you guys, it's an interesting juxtaposition because the Commanders franchise obviously revitalized a new life with a new staff, but of course led by the new quarterback, and the Giants are stuck in neutral with the quarterback that they really don't believe in anymore, but they're still trotting out onto the field.
It's crazy. We had this debate the other day, and it was kind of just internally. But if you go back a few seasons, do you think the Giants wish they lost that playoff game in Minnesota? Because Daniel Jones looked really good in that game, and it was based on that. They paid him, right?
Yeah, no, they would not trade the playoff win, but I think what they would do is, to your point, I don't think they'd be able to do it because this is who they are, but they would try not to overreact to that game. And then 2 weeks prior to that, he had a big game against the Colts at home. So it's like when you set they have to write this like on a whiteboard when they're about to make these decisions. Like, we're about to pay this guy $40 million a year because he had two great games against the Colts and the Vikings. You know what I mean? Like, you just say it out loud. You're probably not going to make that investment. No, I think to your point, JP, they just overreacted to one result. And it's been their MO, whether it's how they handle their coaches or how they handle their quarterbacks. I mean, if you guys remember when they extended Eli's tenure past his due date, his expiration date, it was cited by Dave Gettleman at the time that Eli had this great game against the Eagles in December during a season that didn't matter. It was like one game where he had thrown for like 200-some yards. And so when you're making decisions one like game, that, you're going to get what you deserve, really.
It's the like, I understand how the fans are with the play on the field and things like that, but it's pressure mind on the people making decisions.
Yes, there is. But what I wrote about today for the New York Daily News, B-Mitch, is I don't like the way that – I think everyone agrees that they need to move on at quarterback, but to me it feels like, you know, what I'm calling it is Operation Dime Out Danny. You know, I feel like it's, hey, everything is the quarterback's fault. Once we get a new quarterback, everything will be fixed. Please don't look at everything else that's hiding behind this curtain over here, because their roster decisions, their draft picks, the fact that they have a first-round pick – quitting on the field, now benched last week. You know, you look at the general manager's first round pick, you have Kayvon Thibodeau on injured reserve, you have Evan Neal not playing, you have Deontay Banks benched and not giving maximum effort, and you have Malik Nabers, who is a special talent but has had a tough couple weeks and really is coming off his worst game so far with several drops. So I think to your point, B. Mitch, you know, Daboll is grasping at straws here. And the operation that is supposed to be the foundation of what they're running here is just as much in question as the quarterback.
Here's my question for you, Pat. And I'm not trying to, like, rub this into Giants fans, because I know we have Giants fans that listen to us, right? But just because they live in D.C. and they get used to it. I understand John Mara, every time he gets a chance, says nobody's job's on the line. We're trying to grow this thing. We're trying to do it the right way, et cetera. And I understand if you look at the turnover since they fired Coughlin, it's been significant and it's been consistent. And I get wanting continuity, but how can you watch this product and think, okay, Danny Dimes the problem. We're going to get him out of here, and then we're going to let these guys find us the next guy. And, like, how do you want to reinvest with the Shane Daboll group?
Yeah, I think, JP, that John Mara saying what he said to us the other day was a little bit of like, okay, what else am I going to say right now if I you know, put more pressure on them? I'm essentially saying the firings are coming. Just give it a few weeks. So I think what he was doing was buying himself and trying to buy the team some time there. I mean, despite John Mara saying, I did believe him at the time when he said, you know, we're not making changes in season. He did leave the door open, though, too. I don't anticipate making changes after the season. I mean, I'll tell you guys right now, like, I think this coaching staff is going to be done at the end of this year. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I'm not reporting that, but,
right.
You know, if this stays on the same trajectory and they don't turn it around, John Mara's stated barometer at the end of every season is when I walk off the field at the end of the year, I want to feel like we're headed in the right direction. And to your point, it, objectively, you cannot write everything down and look at it and say that Shane and Daboll have this team in a better place now than they did when they took over.
Does one have it better than the other? Are they in the bed together?
Well, the Giants' history, B-Mitch, is always to give the general manager a longer rope and also to not want to blow up the entire kind of back-end processes of how they've done things, especially because they've changed it over and really given Shane, you know, total control as far as how they operate, how they draft, all of their operations and how they scout. But, you know, from my vantage point, Shane is as involved. He's more involved in this operation than I've ever seen a GM here. And I think you could probably equate it to the way that Howie Roseman is involved in Philadelphia and kind of that like baseball GM model. I mean, he's involved in film studies, reviews with the team. He's, you know, connects to the locker room. He's out there at practice every day, very close out on the field. So it's very difficult to me to separate the two. I personally think if they're being honest about it, you're evaluating both of them either way. You're either keeping them or firing them both is how I view it based on the objectivity of kind of how it's running.
Specific to this week, you know what? I do want to ask one more. I think Bobby Johnson has gotten here and the offensive line has been really good here. I think it's kind of interesting. He was run out up there. There were a billion injuries, and maybe they didn't play well either, but I don't know that any O-line coach was fixing that thing with all the injuries the Giants sustained last year.
Yeah.
Watching the Monday night game and seeing all the penalties, seeing Daboll flip out, seeing them bench Deontay Banks, weirdly, maybe he deserved it, but I don't know that he deserved it in the game like that. How do you think the actual coaching is going up there, in-game preparation, that two-point conversion, what the hell was that? Like, how is the soup to nuts of the teaching, developing players going?
Yeah, Daboll actually said in defense of that play, he was trying to rationalize, like, we spend a lot of time on these things, we should be executing them better. But he said in an interview yesterday, basically, that they've practiced that play as much as any play, so that really didn't come off very well as much as he intended it to. It's like, well, that's pretty worrisome. Bobby, if you're listening, you know, I would tell Bobby Johnson, just it's like in Goodwill Hunting where he says, it's not your fault. You know, like the Bobby Johnsons and the coaches who got either run out of here or who, when they left of their own accord, were blamed for the shortcomings of this operation. I think everybody, if they're looking at it, understands that they were not the reason this team was losing and was dysfunctional. In fact, a great example is like Josh Izudu, a player who Joe Shane drafted in the third round out of North Carolina as a guard. Last year, they moved him to tackle pretty late, and he ended up really struggling. That's how Daniel Jones injured his neck. And it was clear that Azudu just couldn't do it and had been put in a bad position. So it's like, okay, let's give him a year. Let's give him a new offensive line coach, and everything's going to be better because, you know, the way we were coaching him, all these things that we were doing with him were not good enough. Well, he steps in as the starter at left tackle when Andrew Thomas gets hurt against the Eagles. He lasts exactly one full game and gets replaced this past week after one game by a guy they got off the street, off the Niners practice squad, Chris Hubbard, who gave up about 12 pressures to Alex Highsmith in their loss to the Steelers. So that's just one example of how the reputations of these coaches get smeared when they leave and they get kind of scapegoated and pinpointed. And that's really the similar thing that to me that's happening to Daniel Jones right now. It's like it's always somebody else's fault. It's never the guys who are actually running things. And, you know, it was interesting in the week two matchup with Washington and the Giants because the offensive line for Washington obviously was winning that matchup, especially in the run game against the Giants' D-line. But they just had those false starts and those penalties in the red zone that prevented them from getting it in the end zone. So I'm expecting this to be kind of a complete kind of full circle moment for Bobby Johnson and that unit. Because as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot in those spots, I think they're going to have their way on Sunday.
Hey, you were describing to me that they always pass the buck. And I don't think that no organization ever want to be consistently good if the people making the decisions blame all the people that they pick. You know, you pick them, so it got to be your fault.
Exactly. No, and that's, you know, and B. Mitch, like, you've seen this in the league too, but you can move on. Like, it's not going to feel good, right, if someone gets fired or someone gets cut or someone gets demoted in on the depth chart. But there are just different ways to do things. And, you know, that is not the right way to do it. And that's what you're going to see with Jones, you know. Like I just called today for in the Daily News. I just called for to the Giants and said, like, listen, if you don't believe in the guy, just bench him. Just bench him. Just sit him down. Don't play him anymore. Or stand behind him. Show that you believe in him. But don't say that he's our starter. And then after a loss to the Steelers where a zillion bad things happen and you have Dexter Lawrence screaming at teammates on the sidelines, not in a good way, you know, you come out in the post game and you reveal to the media before we speak to the quarterback that the quarterback was the one at fault for the critical game-changing play in the fourth quarter. That is just not the way to do things.
That's not. It's crap.
The pick was terrible. You know what I mean? Like, he messed up, but the whole thing was just a mess. Tyrone Tracy has been running the ball really well. Does Shane Daboll, do they feel a little validation on letting Saquon walk? Or have they tried to puff their chest about that? Or do they know there's no right way to try to handle letting Saquon walk?
They have not puffed their chest about that. They deserve credit for that pick. I mean, the kid's a good player.
Yeah, and, he's been good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good, you know, and he's hurt right now. He has a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol on a short week. That's one of the things to watch this week is how he recovers and whether he plays on Sunday, because that is a big deal for them. He's got some power to him as well as some get up and some speed as a former wide receiver. But they haven't puffed their chest because especially after what Saquon and the Eagles did to them, there's not really much that they can say about that topic and come off well. And then the other thing is they know it's about consistency. Like, one big issue with Saquon, especially when it comes, like, from the Giants' perspective and Joe Shane's perspective, anybody who believes in that positional value, part of the argument is that they, you know, they'll say, look, running backs don't stay healthy. You know, they dip off. And so right now their promising running back is hurt, right? He had a shoulder injury. He had a concussion. It just comes with the position. You're taking a beating. It's a violent sport. So, you know, that's what I would say about that. But, yeah, really good player.
Expect him out this week?
Yeah, I don't know. We're kind of – this today and tomorrow will be the day. I know I've seen him – I see him tweeting, but that doesn't tell us anything about his ability to play football. I would think that he's a tough kid, but it's just you never know how somebody's going to react to this. Usually, JP, when the weeks are shorter like this, like they're coming from Monday concussion to a Sunday game – usually that makes it tougher for guys to go. But, yeah. You know, we'll see.
I wish we knew exactly what they look for. Because, like you're saying, when it's a short week, they don't make it. Longer week, they normally come in. Some guys is there in a week. Some guys 2-3 weeks. I would love to know what they're looking for. I've had a concussion, and I look at all the stuff that's going on today, and I've never seen anybody that had one that deals with a lot of stuff that they see that they put out there today.
Interesting. Well, they definitely have a baseline test. So when guys are healthy, they give them the same test as a baseline that they do if they feel like they might be concussed, so they can compare the results to that baseline. That's one. And then the other is, let's say you sustain a concussion and you have certain symptoms. Let's say it's headaches, right? Like okay. Malik Nabers had like bad headaches. And so his symptoms didn't go away after 1 or 2 days. He still felt it in his head. But then after, I think it was maybe like 5-ish days or so, he started to feel better. So once you get to the point where you can report the absence of the symptoms, then they let you do, you know, non-contact, weight work or, you know, jogging on the side. And then if your body responds to that the next day, then they let you get on the field and do non-contact route running, practicing. And then if you respond well to that, then they graduate you that way. So, there's a specific protocol and they have to follow it and it has to be steady. So that's why, like, if he's not practicing today on Wednesday and then he's not limited and ramped up tomorrow, Thursday, then it becomes difficult to get the player to the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the same kind of stuff I have, how guys do try to game this like anything else. I mean, this is their livelihood and the checks aren't guaranteed, right? That if you do real bad on the baseline to start, that it's a lot easier to pass it when you are in the protocol. But that's let's right. hope that the docs and the people in charge are smart enough to figure that out if we can come up with a theory anyway. Mm-hmm. So looking at this week particularly, I think Washington is a much better team now than they were week two. But still, that week two game kind of came down to Dable not having another kicker on his roster, you know?
Exactly.
Which is just asinine. But will you confirm for me, Pat, did they have an empty roster spot in that game?
Yes, they did have an empty roster spot.
They had 52 dudes, and they knew the kicker might be hurt, and they just left that roster spot empty.
Yeah, interesting part of it, JP, is to your point, what we were just talking about concussions, but, you know, when the player says, I'm fine, I can do it, sometimes that complicates it too, right? Like Graham Gano trying to push through and then them deciding not to, and then that happens versus, like a few weeks ago, their punter, Jamie Gillen, sustained a left hamstring injury in practice, and he could have said, I can do it, I can power through it. But he knew that based on where the injury was, if he tried to kick with it, he might be out 8 weeks instead of 4 weeks. Now he's going to hurt himself and the team. So he says, yeah, I can't go. And so part of it's on the player, but that was complete negligence on the Giants' part. I think it was Jordan Rodham from ESPN who had an interesting kind of report about like a big meeting that happened that Saturday where there were some tense conversations, not knowing exactly what specifically it was about, but might have been a debate about whether they were going to elevate a kicker or not.
Man, you know, you care about the health of the players these days, man.
that's just crazy. But my greater point there.
Why are we still trying to get an 18 game?
Right. Is that the last game was close. And I think, you know, the line isn't particularly big in this thing. What do you expect Sunday in the Meadowlands?
Yeah, no, you're right. These games, they always feel like they end up being tight. To me, this has to do, whether the game is close has to do with the Commanders' defense. Like, I think I talked to you guys maybe about it at the time afterwards, I don't remember, but Washington's defensive plan when the Giants and Commanders played in week two didn't make any sense to me. Like, they just ran, like, a lot of cover one with man-to-man on the outside, and they left Nabers in kind of one-on-one coverage, and often they gave him a cushion, and the Giants just kept getting, like, easy completions, catches, and runs to him. And really, you know, I know you're not trying to get beat over top, but I think you play a zone against the Giants you know, it's a much better way to handle it, and you don't let a guy get beat by neighbors because he will win a lot of 50-50 balls, and that's how the Giants have to move the ball, is unlock number one big time. The Giants have the worst run defense on the other side of the ball in the NFL. They allow 5.4 yards per carry. I know the Commanders still allow 5 on their side of the ball, but I think Brian Robinson Jr. is going to have a huge day. And frankly, if you watch the Steelers game, the only time the Steelers got themselves in trouble on offense and shot themselves in the foot is when they didn't run the ball. You know, they were throwing the ball well in the second half, but like they went and shotgun and threw the ball on like a 3rd and 1 in the Giants territory. And the Giants defensive line does lead the league in sacks. They have 35 sacks, not just the line, the defense as a whole. So you're playing into their hands if you throw the ball when you could just hand it off to a punishing back like Robinson Jr. But, you know, I think the Giants are going to get whooped. I think I would hope. I mean, you know, if I were a Commanders fan, I'd be go watch the first half tape or the whole game tape of week 2 against the Giants. And you're wondering what Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn are not adjusting to in that game. If they come out of that and they understand there's a different way to defend the Giants, I don't even think this game will end up particularly close.
Pat, last thing. When you say whooped, what's the right spelling there? W-H-O-O-P-E-D?
Yeah.
How would you?
Whooped.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's how I would say it. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but yeah.
Leonard says run the ball 50 times.
I'm sending the tweet right now. Talking with Pat Leonard about Week 9 Washington versus New York. Quote, I think the Giants are going to get whooped. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for putting me out there like that. I'm looking forward to checking my mentions.
Join the crew, Pat. Join the crew.
Do you want me to holster my sidearm here? I don't have to send.
Yeah, that would be nice of you. But if you don't holster it, you let it fly. You know, it'd be nothing I haven't said before. So
all good. I owe you one. I holstered it. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, bro.
That's our guy, Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News. Does a great job. Check out his podcast. He goes all over the league.